Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another Taco Tuesday. I'm registered dietitian nutritionist Amber Boyens with MU Nutrition here in Madison, Minnesota. And I'm here to chat again about food and nutrition and all those wonderful things. And today we're going to chat a little bit about food preferences. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how we develop our food preferences. Why does one person love tomatoes? Or broccoli, or Brussels sprouts, or chicken, and somebody else doesn't enjoy eating those foods. That comes from a few different places, and we'll hit on each of those today. So, the first one that we'll hit on is our genetics. Our genes can impact how we use food, how we experience food, all of those things. So, somewhere around 34 genes have been found to potentially impact our eating preferences. So something called single nucleotide polymorphisms or SNPs, mutations in those genes, can impact how our body uses or experiences food. So one way that that can happen, some of our genes impact our digestion and our absorption of certain foods. One of those genes that does that is a little bit more research and that some people have maybe heard of is something called ApoE. This gene has been associated with conditions such as the development of heart disease. And part of that is because this gene impacts how well we remove cholesterol. So when we hear those stories about people who have followed a terrible diet or a less healthy diet their whole lives, and now they never develop any kind of heart disease or they never have high cholesterol, and then we have somebody else who's working really hard at following a heart healthy lifestyle, and they still struggle to get that cholesterol down. Part of that reason may be genetics, and ApoE is one of the genes that may have some variations that can influence that. Genes can also impact food allergies and food intolerances. So we have some genes that impact things like lactose intolerances. Also, the genes HLA-DQ2 and HLA-DQ8 have been associated with celiac disease risk. So celiac disease is an allergy to gluten, and it's also an autoimmune disorder. So variations or SNPs on those genes can increase your risk of developing celiac disease. Some genes impact how we utilize different vitamins. A good example of this that some people have maybe heard of is a gene called the MTHFR gene. And a SNP on this MTHFR gene can impact how we use folate or how we metabolize folate. And if we're not breaking it down appropriately, we can develop kind of a buildup of something called homocysteine. And an elevated homocysteine in the long run can be a big inflammatory marker that increases our risk of developing certain diseases like, again, heart disease or diabetes. So sometimes people with that gene can do better with different versions of folate. Genes also impact how we experience taste. So there are genes that impact how we experience bitter foods, salty foods, sweet foods. GLUT2 is a gene that we found is partially responsible for how we experience sweet foods or our sweetness sensitivity, essentially. So for people who really enjoy sweet foods, or other people who do not enjoy sweet things may have different versions or SNPs on GLUT2. We also have genes that influence how we metabolize and eliminate non-food components. So those things are sometimes called xenobiotics, or things that come in with our food that aren't food that our body gets rid of. Some of our genes can impact how good of a job our body does and moving those through our body's natural detoxification pathways. And we have genes that just influence our overall eating preferences. So, excessive expression of FTO, a gene called FTO, is associated in people with people who have greater food intake and subsequent increases in body weight and in body fat. Even when we adjust for energy expenditure or physical activity, this gene can be associated with just a higher weight and greater increase in food intake. And genes can impact food addiction. So along that same line, we have food or genes that are associated with alcoholism, with smoking, and also with food addiction. So how we perceive our desire to have certain foods. Now, super important to make a couple of notes on this. First of all, it doesn't mean that we're destined to a certain diet or to liking or not liking certain foods just because we have a certain genetic makeup. Now, in the case of food intolerances or food allergies, there may certainly be foods that our genes are telling us we can't have. But when it comes to what we enjoy, like Brussels sprouts or tomatoes or chicken, some of that has to do with other things. So our environment. And before we move on to talking about environment, I think just kind of another important note. We've talked about testing before, and there are tests that will market that you can swab your cheek or send in a DNA sample, and they're going to send you a printout with the exact diet that you should follow based on your genes. And while that is phenomenal in theory, our understanding of all of these genes is really not there to a point where something like that can accurately give us an appropriate diet. So I would discourage people, with the exception of a handful of genes that can be helpful for things like celiac disease or the MTHFR gene in some cases, if you're looking at any of those, rather than sending in an over-the-counter test, work with your healthcare team to determine if there are any genetic markers in there that are going to impact how your body uses food. So let's talk a little bit about the environment piece of this, because like I said, genetics don't determine what you're going to enjoy and what you're not based on genes alone. So our exposures begin even before we're born. So maternal diet while pregnant and breastfeeding can impact food preferences in infants and toddlers and subsequently even into adulthood. So not all food flavors are passed into breast milk or amniotic fluid, but we do see it with some seasonings like garlic and vanilla and some vegetables such as carrots. But even maternal stress during pregnancy appears to impact diet even into early childhood, and diet quality tends to be poorer with greater increased maternal stress. So one reason or one theory that could be the case is because of some of our hormones, our stress hormones, which also impact our cravings, our desire to hold on to fat, all of those kinds of things. Food restrictions, so restricting food, fighting at meals, the way we talk about food, all of that kind of stuff is associated with food aversions or cravings later in life as well. So that healthy meal structure and allowing for intuitive eating, letting kids listen to their bodies, eating when they're hungry, stopping when they're full, also impacts things into adulthood. Now, even with that childhood impact, maternal impacts, amniotic fluid, breast milk, formula, all of those kinds of things, that's still not our destiny either. We can train our adulthood, our taste buds well into adulthood. So if you were to go without any added sugars for a couple of weeks or without any added salt for a couple of weeks and simply switch to natural foods, you would start to notice that you experience those foods a little bit differently. Now, I'm not saying you should do that. I'm not saying that you should go ahead and cut out anything added to your food. But the more we cut back on all of those added sugars, the more we're able to experience true food and how our body experiences the natural sugars that already occur in what we're eating. So neuroscientists continue to explore how we can improve our diet by improving our preferences. I have even noted that things like recently illnesses such as COVID can influence how we perceive taste as well. And they're looking into what other illnesses may impact some of that, whether it's gene expression or how some of our sensing processes are impacted. So what we enjoy and what we eat heavily impacts our health in the long run into the future, our development of chronic diseases. Research has long established the impact of diet on diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and so many more across the board. So if you want to start training your taste buds to support health, feel free to reach out anytime. You can find me online at www.imunutrition.com. That's imunutrition.com. On Facebook at Immune Nutrition, or you can also reach out to your provider at the clinic here in Madison to schedule an appointment or contact Q92 for my information. I look forward to chatting with you all again next week on Taco Tuesday. Have a great week.